Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 14, The Story of King Vena. Text number 1. Maitreya Uvacha.
Maitreya Uvacha.
Vrigvadayaste munayo
Vrigvadayaste munayo
Lokanam shemadarsinaha
Lokanam shemadarsinaha
Goptarya sativainrinam
Goptarya sativainrinam
Pasyanta pasusamyatam
Pasyanta pasusamyatam
Maitreya uvacha
Maitreya uvacha
Vrigvadayaste munayo
Vrigvadayaste munayo
Lokanam shemadarsinaha
Lokanam shemadarsinaha
Goptarya sativainam
Goptarya sativainam
Pasyanta pasusamyatam
Pasyanta pasusamyatam
Maitreya uvacha
Maitreya uvacha
Vrigvadayaste munayo
Vrigvadayaste munayo
Lokanam shemadarsinaha
Lokanam shemadarsinaha
Goptarya sativainrinam
Goptarya sativainrinam
Pasyanta pasu samyatam
Pasyanta pasu samyatam
Maitreya uvacha
Maitreya uvacha
The great sage Maitreya continued. Bhrigu Adayaha. Headed by Bhrigu. Te. All of them. Munayo. The great sages. Lokanam. Of the people. Jemadarsinaha. Who always aspire for the welfare. Goptari. The king. Asati. Being absent. By. Certainly. Srinam. Of all the citizens. Pasyantaha.
Having understood.
Pasu samyatam. Existence on the level of the animals. Great sage Maitreya continued, O great hero Vidura, the great sages headed by Bhrigu were always thinking of the welfare of the people in general. When they saw that in the absence of King Anga there was no one to protect the interests of the people, they understood that without a ruler, the people would become independent and non-regulated. Purport. In this verse, the significant word is kshema darshinaha, which refers to those who are always looking after the welfare of the people in general. All the great sages headed by Bhrigu were always thinking of how to elevate all the people of the universe to the spiritual platform. Indeed, they advised the kings of every planet to rule the people with that ultimate goal of life in mind. The great sages used to advise the head of the state or the king, and he used to rule the populace in accordance with their instruction. After the disappearance of King Anga, there was no one to follow the instructions of the great sages. Consequently, all the citizens became unruly. So much so that they could be compared to animals. As described in Bhagavad Gita chapter 4, text 13, human society must be divided into four orders according to quality and work. In every society there must be an intelligent class, administrative class, productive class, and worker class. In modern democracy, these scientific divisions are turned topsy-turvy. And by vote, sudras or workers are chosen for administrative posts. Having no knowledge of the ultimate goal of life, such persons whimsically enact laws without knowledge of life's purpose. The result is that no one is happy. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmae Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahiyam Tadanti Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Garim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Shri Guru Dinatarinam. Okay. So the significant word is, what? Does anybody remember without looking at their iPhones? You're looking at your phone.
Not at the script.
Chema darshanaha. Chema. Chema means welfare, benefit, long-term benefit. We have the word Shreyas. Prayas and Shreyas. Short-term benefit, long-term benefit. Chema Darshanaha. That means they're always looking for the long-term benefit of the citizens. Lokanam. Who's that? Who's looking for the benefit of the citizens? Munaya, the great sages, headed up by Bhrigu. Bhrigu Adayas, beginning with Bhrigu. Bhrigu Muni. So, who's talking? Hey. Who's in charge of those two? Nobody. Okay. Somebody just... Anyway, keep an eye on them. So... there's a characteristic of the Munis, which means those who are thoughtful. Learned and thoughtful men, right? They're always concerned for the benefit of everyone, the long-term benefit. And they are concerned because Maharaj Anga had left home, but there wasn't anybody to take his position. And so... there was a concern that without the king there wouldn't be any order within society. You know, there needs to be some structure and some order in order to achieve one's purpose, right? Success success doesn't come about by accident. Just like self-realization doesn't come about by accident. You know, you walk down the street and all of a sudden a beam of light comes out of the sky and touches you and then, boom, you're self-realized. Huh? No, it requires hard work. If you want to achieve something of substance and that's beneficial for everybody, it requires a great deal of effort. So one of the qualifications of the Moonies, or the thoughtful people, is that they know the purpose of life and what one has to do to achieve that purpose. The sadhya is the goal. And of course the goal of life is to become aware of oneself, self-realized. And one needs to know the means by which one can achieve self-realization. It's a process. It's not haphazard. We can see, if we look at the creation, we can see it has, well, there's a system for a start. There's a system. Sun comes up, the sun goes down, the stars move, the seasons move. There's a cycle of actions and reactions that take place in a consistent and ordered fashion. There's structure. You know, my friends used to tell me, God doesn't exist. There's no purpose in life. But then when I looked around at the creation, I could see that everything was working with order. So I was thinking, if there's no purpose and it's all just, if it's all just the result of a big bang, you know, it should be just chaos. Huh? You know, if you blow something up, what do you get? You just get a mess. You just get a mess. Where have we ever seen in nature an explosion that's created a structured, ordered thing? It is just patently stupid. And people fall for this kind of stuff. So at least from my observation of what was going on around me, I could tell there's some order, some structure. There must be some purpose behind this whole arrangement. And for some reason, I had this notion or this idea that the real purpose of life was to understand who am I? Who am I? Why am I here? Right? And why am I suffering? These are the questions that Rupa Goswami asked Lord Chaitanya. These are natural questions, or these are questions that arise naturally in the heart of a thoughtful person, like a Muni. A thoughtful person wants to know what am I supposed to be doing here? And so, in the association of the thoughtful men and women, the thoughtful devotees, actually. One is able to learn the purpose of life. This is the great benediction, the great boon that we get from coming into the association of the devotees. Because we meet people who, you know, I was always struck by the fact that the devotees were always very sure what the purpose of life was. The purpose of life is to know Krishna, right? And Krishna looks like this, and he lives here, and he does this, and he does that, right? I remember opening up the Nectar of Devotion in one of my friend's house and looking at the description of Krishna playing with his friends in Vrindavan. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source of everything. And I was just reading this, and my notion of God was some energy, formless energy that pervades everything. And then I read this in the Nectar of Devotion, a description of Krishna playing in a forest with cows and his friends. And I'm thinking, whoa, this is too much. How do they know what God looks like? Right? Because the whole idea is he's formless, he's everywhere, he's within everything. So how can he be a person? Right? And I was thinking, how come these Hare Krishnas know everything? And they know what God looks like, they know where he lives. And what the purpose of life is. And how to get there. Right? Also, this was all very... on one side it was bewildering, and on the other side it all made sense. It was quite a challenge. So the benefit of the association of such thoughtful people is that one also can solve these issues. There's the issue of knowing oneself, analysing oneself. Prabhupada mentions in the Bhagavatam, if you can analyse yourself, then you can know God. Because we're just a little portion of God. So if we can analyse what we are, then we can know what God is. That's pretty amazing. Right? And so that's on the spiritual platform, but there's also another level of self-realisation. There's the spiritual understanding of who we are, but there's also the material understanding, right? What are you going to do when you grow up? What are you going to do when you grow up, Kita? No, you don't know. I don't know. They used to ask me too. And I used to think, will you stop asking me that stupid question? Because I don't know, right? And I don't know anybody who can tell me either. They keep it a secret, right? They keep it a secret from you. And somehow you're supposed to work it all out, that what you're going to do. On the one hand, they tell you, you've got to do that, you've got to go to school, you've got to pass your, you've got to get good marks so you go to university. Right? This is what they'll tell you. You've got to get good marks and go to university. Right? What my parents didn't tell me is, when I got to university, what am I going to do when I get there? Right? I discovered the record lounge. And there was a place where they had this big sound system and I could take my records, just put them on and play them all day long. Right? I didn't have to answer to anybody. They gave me money every fortnight, put straight in my bank account. And nobody was checking on me as to what I was doing. I thought, this is pretty amazing. How long is this going to last? I could do nothing and listen to music all day long and get money in my bank account. I knew this was not the purpose of life, though. So, and this is why the Munis, this is why they were concerned, because there's two elements in our existence. There's the spiritual, but there's also the material, right? Which you can't avoid. You've got to fulfill your material responsibilities. And you've also got to pursue your spiritual aspirations or your spiritual purpose. Two purposes in life, right? And the reason why the king is important, because the king was missing in this equation, is because the king is supposed to ensure that people are properly engaged both spiritually and materially, because they go together. Right? There's not, you can't divorce one from the other. You have to put the two practically together in order to pursue success at both levels. And so that's why the king is important and the sages are important, because the sages are able to give guidance to the administrators or the kshatriyas, the brahmanas, those who are, understand the process of combining both the spiritual and the material, so that one comes to, so one arrives at the ultimate destination, which is self-realization, and all of its, all of the ramifications, all the corollaries that come from that, plus proper engagement in one's what we might call material duties. Now, the interesting thing is that when those material duties are properly balanced and one is making progress in spiritual life, then they're not material duties anymore. This is the interesting thing, that one's life, if focused on making spiritual progress, then all of those activities that support it also become spiritualized. So there's a science, there's a system, there's a process for doing this. And the Munis knew that it was dependent on a good king. And a good king being a person who respects the sadhus and spiritual principles, the shastra, knows then how to organize society and seeks advice from the sadhus or the saintly, the Vaishnavas, effectively. Huh? And then who organizes and structures society in such a way so that people are properly engaged. And so we have a description of the, a rough description of, or a broad description, general description of the head being the brahmanas, the arms being the, this is the social body. For the social body to be healthy, needs, you know, if your body is healthy, what do you need? You need a head that's got a brain in it. Right? In this day and age, not easy to find. Right? Because it's all clouded up with stupidity. And arms, torso, body, and legs. Right? We need all of these features to have a healthy body. So society is structured in such a way so that the devotees are the head of society, because they know ultimately the purpose is self-realization, not material acquisition. Although material acquisition is not rejected out of hand, because we all have ahara nidya bhayam maitunam cha, right? Eating, sleeping, mating and defending. We all need to eat. We all need to sleep. I was feeling very happy yesterday, actually. I was wondering, how come I was feeling so happy? And then I looked at my Fitbit and it said I slept for 7 hours. Usually, if I look at my Fitbit, it says 3 hours or 4 hours, or, you know, because it doesn't, because you're restless and it thinks you haven't gone to sleep. You know, I thought I went to bed at 10 o'clock. It says I went to bed at 1 o'clock. I'm thinking, what's going on here? But anyway, I was feeling really good yesterday. I thought, what's going on here? And then I looked, 7 hours sleep. I thought, oh, okay. So you need sleep. Huh? The more sleep you get, the better. Well, make sure you get enough sleep, right? And rest. It's got to be rest, not, you know, things going around in your head all night. Eating, sleeping, sense gratification. We need some sense gratification. And depending on our natural propensities for renunciation, we will pursue a certain level, or we need a certain degree of sensual engagement. Without it, we'll go crazy. Krishna says, what can repression accomplish? But our desires will spill out. You may have noticed. We try to be renounced, but what happens? Right? Even though the Hare Krishnas in Melbourne get so much prasadam to eat, they still have to steal, and they can't eat. It's Janmashtami. Despite Rupa Goswami tells us, Atyahara, over-collecting destroys devotion, right? We have to steal the maha and stash it somewhere. And you can't even eat it at the feast, at the midnight feast. You've got to keep it until the next day. So like I say, what will repression accomplish? Nothing. I mentioned this the other day in class, but I'll say it again. You know, the deepest meditation on Krishna that I saw on Janmashtami was after the midnight feast was served. And there were just devotees all around the temple, and they're all just sitting there, deeply meditating on the prasadam. Also thinking about the maha they're going to have tomorrow. Eating, sleeping, sense gratification, and defending. Basically, animal propensities. These are the animal propensities. And because we've got a material body, we'll have those propensities to a greater or a lesser degree, depending on our piety, actually, our advancement. So ordered, structured exercise of those propensities is built into the vana and ashrama system, right? Vana means our occupation. That's the bit that our parents are saying, what are you going to do when you grow up? What are you going to be when you grow up? It'll be something that's natural to you or natural to us. Because, you know, you can be working in a job and you can do it, but if it's not to your nature, you'll hate it. Anybody been engaged in doing something that you don't like? We do it all the time. Yeah, we do it all the time. But we do it because we have to. We're forced to do it. But generally that doesn't make us happy. When a person is engaged according to their natural propensities, their varna, then they'll, even though it's routine, right, it's something that we do regularly, you'll be happy doing it, settled, satisfied doing it. Like, this is why people go crazy. Some, you know, they're doing the same thing, they don't like it, and then they explode. Oh, I hate this, and I hate the world, I hate everything. So the Varnashram system is meant to help us. And this is what education is really all about, or should be all about, is, well, first of all, teaching us that we're not the body, that we're spirit soul. But then, okay, I'm not the body, but I've got a body. And this is our philosophy, Beda Abeda Tattva, right? Inconceivable. That I'm not the body, but at the same time, I've got a body. You're not the body. Well, okay, that's all right. But hang on, what's all this? So I am the body also. So then what do we do with the body? Well, we work out what our natural propensities are so that we then engage those in things that we do occupationally and which we'll be happy and satisfied doing and we'll be productive for ourselves and for the rest of society. And you know, in a structured and ordered society, usually the children inherit. This is why we have, you know, we hear it in the Vedic culture of towns and cities organised in such a way so that we have the Brahmanas here, Kshatriyas there, Vaishyas and the Sudras. Right? And so there wasn't mixing. And so the natural propensities of the individuals were inherited from the parents. And the occupation was inherited from the parents. Even the education came from just working with the parents. Right? And of course, going to the Gurukul or going to the instruction received from the Brahmanas. In relationship to cultivating our spiritual identity. But in this day and age, it's forgotten or it's not clearly understood. We send children to school, but it's kind of everybody's got to go to university, although that's not how it used to be when I was a kid, actually. When we were living in Port Pirie, there were two high schools. And Port Pirie was a railway town. We had the smelters, the BHAS smelters, and that's where the iron, not the iron, the lead and the zinc came from Broken Hill into Port Pirie and into the smelters, and that's where they would get the zinc and the lead out. So it was an industrial town. Right? Same with Whyalla and same with Port Augusta. They were actually all industrial towns, but also in a rural region. And so in Port Pirie, we had a high school and a technical high school, right? And in the high school, we did subjects like Latin. I did Latin and French, right? But you didn't get Latin and French in the tech high school. And we used to go to the tech high school. In first year, we went to tech high school to do art and to do tech drawing, which I like to do. I wasn't that good of an artist, but I like to be able to, you know, do diagrams of nuts and bolts and stuff. That's what they train you to do. So there was a consideration. And in fact, in Whyalla, where my father went to school, they didn't have a high school, they just had a tech high. Right? That's where they trained the carpenters and the plumbers and the electricians and the accountants and so forth in technical work. So there was a recognition of the fact that, okay, there's more academic, so you could say, you know, Brahminical, notionally. Although, you know, kids in a country, Australian town, not many Brahmanas, I don't think. Judged by their behaviour on the weekend. not many Brahmanas, maybe some. And then there was the tech, and the tech high school, and that's where the apprentices came out of the tradespeople. Right? So there was even in Western society. Even now probably, there's a recognition of the fact that there are different propensities for different types of people. And of course the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says here, what was that, verse 4 something, 13 or 4:13. Human society must be divided into four orders, according to quality and work. Right? So generally speaking, those in the mode of goodness are the Brahmanas, mixed goodness and passion, the Kshatriyas, passion primarily the Vaishyas and more ignorance than anything, the Sudras. So in that way, then the natural propensities, and the king has to understand this science, and of course he gets that from the Brahmanas, from the devotees. Ideally, the Brahmanas are the learned section of society. So the Munis could see that this wasn't, the king wasn't there. The king is important because he's the one who tells everybody what to do. And if they don't do it, he picks up the stick. Right? And that's generally what Sudras need, a bit of a stick. You don't hit them with a stick, but you just show the stick. Right? Just like with children. We don't hit our children, do we? We just threaten them, ideally. You know, because sometimes boys don't behave. Is that right? Yeah. And even if they're told what to do, they still won't do it. Is that right? Yeah. So how do we get you to do it? Huh? If you don't want to do something and you say you don't want to do something, what does your dad do? What does he do? It looks like he's not aware of. I know what my dad used to do. So, the king is, you know, there needs to be a leader in all society. Prabhupada mentions, you know, without a leader, then there's chaos. Right? There's meant to be organization, there's meant to be structure, there's meant to be systems in order to achieve, just like we have our process of sadhana. It's a system, it's a practice. Huh? And the master of that system is the spiritual master. And just as the spiritual master corrects disciples when they don't do the right thing, that's his service, right? Not that he's the master, but he's actually the servant. And the servant acts as the master to see that the students are properly disciplined so that they'll get the benefit of the process. If we don't, what is it? Utpatyaiva. What is it? Shruti Smriti Puranadi Pancharatrika Vidhim Vina. Without the guidelines of the Shruti and the Smriti and the Pancharatra and the Puranas, without the guidelines of the Vedas, what do you get? You get just disturbance. And so that's what the rishis could see. No king, nobody supervising, that means people will just do what they like. Right? So here, they had the vision, Chema Darshanaha, but they saw no king. Gop Dari Asati. The king wasn't there. And so therefore, their vision was Pasyantaha. Right? Pasyanti means to see. Right? Pashu Samyatam. Pashu means animal. Right? And samyatam means as good as animals. Sam means the same as. Right? So they could see. Without the king, the citizens are just going to be behaving like a bunch of animals. Right? And that's what we've got in society today. We've got so-called leaders of society, but they can't tell the difference between an animal and a civilized human being. In fact, their job is facilitating the animals, because if they facilitate the animals, they get their vote. This is why Prabhupada didn't like democracy, because you pander to the LCD. You know what the LCD is? Anybody know what the LCD is? Didn't you do math in primary school? LCD. Lowest common denominator. Very good. Go to the top of the class. Right? And what's the lowest common denominator in modern society? What is it? Sex and drugs and Bollywood in India. Huh? In Australia, sex and drugs and footy. Yeah, the footy. Footy. And, you know, it's footy, it's finals at the moment, so everybody's, you know, the footy. Interesting, in football, there are some principles that we can take advantage of even in spiritual life. Like, you know, the commentators say, oh, you've got to be in it for the good of the team. Right? Etc. So many things. We can learn something, you know, a Vaishnava can take even gold from a filthy place. Right? So, pasu samyatam, behaving like animals, is not for the ultimate benefit of the citizens. And so, and this is why Prabhupada preferred a Krishna conscious king, right? What we would call a dictator. And why people are attracted to people, to persons like a Mr. Chump, right? This is what the Chinese call Trump, Mr. Chump. or even Putin. Right? When there's an enlightened king who rules with a strong arm, then everybody benefits. Right? Everybody benefits. So that's why, you know, a monarch, well educated and well trained, who understands spiritual principles, is the ideal system. It's Krishna's system, actually. But because in Kali Yuga, the Kshatriyas, well, actually, because the Brahmanas became corrupt, then there wasn't anybody to keep an eye on the Kshatriyas, who became even more corrupt. Right? And so now, you know, the politicians proclaim that they're here for our benefit, right? We just had a change of prime minister, and so the new prime minister says, you know, it's all Team Australia. We're thinking, ho hum. Well, why did you change a man who was the most popular and the most competent leader that we've had for some time, and you just rolled him? What did you do that for? If you were for our benefit, then you wouldn't be doing silly things like we witnessed a few weeks ago. People are scratching their heads, what are these guys doing? And all of the commentators are saying, this is just purely politics, personal motivation. They're not concerned about the welfare of the country. They're only concerned about themselves. Right? Whereas the vision of the Moonies is actual looking for the real welfare and the real benefit of the citizens. What is it? Reality distinguished from illusion for the benefit of all. This is the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Dharma Projita Kaitavatra. Kick out cheating. Right? Kick out cheats. This is what the populace wants to do. This is the mood now. People are so disgusted with democracy. They just want to kick out all politicians. Right? This is how people feel. These guys are just in it for themselves. Or for, who knows, whoever's giving them the biggest donations, that's who they're beholden to. Effectively, right? So it's buying, give the populace sense gratification because that's what they think they want or need to buy their votes, but then also manipulate the whole thing because the Vaishyas, the business people, are putting money into the politicians' pockets. Hey, do this for me, do that for me. And so we see decisions that the politicians make aren't really for the benefit of the citizens, but they're for the benefit of vested interests who give them money. This is what's basically going on, right? And we're stuck in the middle, or stuck on the outside, not really being cared for by anybody. And that's another reason why people become more selfish. Right? They see, oh, these guys are the leaders of society are being selfish, so why shouldn't I? Whereas, and this is why, you know, somo damas tapa, austerity, is considered to be the wealth of the brahmanas, because they're able to maintain their independence and their they can be free from influence because they're happy pursuing doing their bhajan. Right? They're happy and satisfied being properly engaged in their natural propensities of action and in the cultivation of not sense gratification, but in the cultivation of spiritual knowledge. Right? And so they can remain detached and uninfluenced. And this is why in Vedic culture, austerity and detachment are the most valued and the most respected, because those people can't be bought. The brahmanas or the devotees should be aloof, and so then able to dispense with information that's for the ultimate benefit of everybody. They can't be bought. They remain independent, and they're focused. Their focus is on spiritual cultivation, spiritual practice. And so they'll be naturally detached. And if they give somebody information that they don't like, at least they present it nicely, right? Presentation of truth is always done in such a way so that it's palatable to others, or sweet to the ear, but putting it into practice might be another thing. Right? we can explain to people, here's why we follow the regulated principles. And they'll say, yeah, that sounds really good. But then when we observe their behaviour, we see they can't do it. Right? But that's why the Brahminical class is the head of society, because they're equipoised. Samo, Damas, sense control, austere, Socham, cleanliness, clean. What else is there? Samo, Damas, Tapa, Socham, Jnanam, no. What's the next? Ahimsa, is it? Arajavam, simplicity. Right? Chantir, tolerant. Right? Tolerant. Jnanam, learned. Vijnanam, learned, but also knows how to apply the knowledge. There's some attractiveness to a person has learning, you know, because they're. But there's one thing to sprout something. There's another thing to look after it and to nurture it and have it grow. And that's vijnanam. No, understanding the learning, but then being able to put it into practice is so, so important. Sometimes we find in ISKCON that there are devotees who are quite learned, but it is very theoretical. And then say if you put them into a managerial position, they make a mess of everything. So sometimes it's said, keep the brahmanas out of management. Because it's just theory. But a really, real brahmana needs to know the theory, but then you've got to also put it into practice so that it works. Right? No point in having a mess. So the level of a Brahmana, even of a Vaishnava, Vaishnava is better than Brahmana. Right? The reason why we give the Brahman thread to the devotees is because the Vaishnava is better than a Brahmana. Not that now you've become a Brahmana, oh, you're good. No, you're better than a Brahmana. Right? This is why the position of a devotee is very, very important, and the standards of behaviour and so forth have to be adhered to. The example has to be set. Prabhupada told the devotee, told Yamuna in Vrindavan, he said, if you don't follow these principles of behaviour, you won't be criticised, but they'll criticise me. Yeah? They'll criticise me. So, and you know, it was very hard for Yamuna because Prabhupada was giving Yamuna duties such as being part of the temple construction, constructing the altar, designing the altar, purchasing the deities, getting all of the clothes made. So she was in effect, she had to go and do business. But that was generally the domain of the men, right? And so she was told, you're not allowed to talk to men. Just hang on. And Prabhupada gave her these, hugely challenging for her. And this is when the devotees first lived in Vrindavan. Very different situation to what it is now. Because they were the first Western Vaishnavas to live in Vrindavan. And so the whole of Vrindavan was like, what are they up to? Very difficult for Yamuna. And also having to deal with the men, because there were a few Indian men there and they wouldn't talk to the women. So she was in a very tough situation. So the etiquette, the following of the etiquette, Vaishnava etiquette, is super important for the devotees. Renounced, detached, learned, equipoised, meticulously clean. These are all the characteristics that we have to cultivate and demonstrate to others. Huh? Big responsibility for us, actually, when you think about it. And then we're in a position, we should be, ideally, we're in a position then to instruct the kshatriyas who are going to get everything done. This relationship, this Varnashram system, where people are properly engaged according to their propensities, and we have a strong Vaishnav culture, which will automatically embody the Brahminical culture. Right, this is really what Prabhupada envisaged in ISKCON. Of course, the thing is also, in ISKCON, we attract everybody. And so there will be Brahminically inclined people, there will be administration, there will be Kshatriya, there will be Vaishyas, and there will be Sudras. Right? And then it's Kali Yuga, and so what does that mean? They're all mixed up. Right? I know, if I look at my propensities certainly not difficult to identify the sudra. But then also, I like to read Prabhupada's books, I like philosophy, so there's some inclination towards some Brahminic, but also I have a very strong administrator bent, which I can't not, you know, I can't say, oh, I'm a Brahmana. No, but I'm not, because I also like to organise things. I like to tell people what to do. Huh? I learned it from my father. He liked to do that too. Huh? So we're mixed up. We're mixed up. Not a particularly good Vaishya. I have many friends who are much better Vaishyas than me. So, but nevertheless, we need to recognize in ourselves, and usually we do that with the assistance of others, what our natural propensities are. This is self-realization. There's a spiritual side, but there's also understanding our material propensities. Right? And so, you know, if I ask you at, how old are you? No, at 30, nearly 40. Whoa. You know, what do you do? You know, and you say, oh, I don't know. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Right? Then there's a problem. Right? People, we should know by age 23, 24, 25, we should know what we're good at doing. And usually that will have been worked out for us in any case very often. Now, so if we want to find out whether a person is a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya or Sudra, ask them, what's your job? You know, Bhavananda used to, he'd ask people, they'd come along and they'd be coming to programs at the temple, and ask them, what do you do? And they say, oh, I'm a musician. And he would say, oh, well, that means you're unemployed then. Right? That means you're on the dole. That means you're a sudra, basically. You're a sudra. And, you know, Prabhupada would say, if you want to test a Vaishya, ask him if he's got any money in his pocket. If he hasn't got any money in his pocket, he's not a Vaishya. You see, people in India, when they pull out their money and they've got this big wad of rupees, right? Because in India, if you've got money, you've got a big wad of rupees. So, if we have a template, and we do have a template, the Varnashram system is a template, and we haven't even mentioned ashram. But the Varna means, you know, you'll be, we can recognize the natural role of the individual by looking at their propensities, what they, and very often that's manifest already in a person's life. Right? It by the time a person has gone through, you know, prep and primary school, infant school, primary school, high school, university, or some, you know, at that point in our careers, at 18, 19, 20, we're being trained, ideally, we're being trained in recognition of the propensities that we have, right? And so then naturally that's being fine-tuned and enhanced. So that by the time a person is, and this is where the ashram comes in, by the time a person reaches marriageable age and to move into the household ashram, they've had their occupational and vocational training applied to them according to their propensities. This is the ideal running of the educational system. Again, that's why the king is needed. The administration is needed to make sure that there are educational programs so that the young men and women will be trained according to their propensities and their natural tendency to act. then they'll be happy. This is how you get a happy society where people are actually doing the things that they're naturally inclined to do. Push them into the wrong, put a square peg in a round hole and you've got a mess. And that's why society is such a mess today, because we're trying to squeeze people into the wrong things. So this is, you know, this is the vision of the Vaishnavas, should be. Even we have difficulty working out, oh, Varna and Ashram, how are we going to do this? Although in most cases it works itself out naturally. And also we see the natural tendencies, the natural brahminical tendencies come out in the devotees. You see it in their ability to understand the philosophy, in their ability to sit and chant Hare Krishna. Well, this is a brahminical activity. And in fact, we're trying to make everybody into brahmanas. Even the sudras can become brahmanas. There's no actual restriction. And so it's very interesting how our culture is primarily brahminical culture. Right? Rise early in the morning. Take a bath. Offer prayers to the spiritual master. Right? Is what we do. Then worship and spiritual master and ultimately Krishna. Right? Sri Vigrahara, Dana Nityanana. Etc. So, and then for 2 hours, there's either puja being performed, or what are we doing? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Huh? That sound. There's nothing so mystical as hearing the sound of the devotees chanting japa. In the temple room, there's this sound. It's like, whoa, wow, that's far out. Then again, worship the deity, worship the spiritual master, hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. Like, this is all very, it's Vaishnav culture, but Vaishnav culture automatically has brahminical culture in it. Automatically. So that we all do. So that means we're all cultivating our brahminical side. Right? But after breakfast, what do? We then take our natural propensities and engage them. Because we're not all going to be brahmanas for the rest of the day. Right? It's tough enough, you know, to get to to get to the end of class. Right? You're thinking, oh boy, 9 o'clock, let's have something to eat. Right? But even that propensity to be like an animal is engaged by taking prasadam, right? We take prasadam. But then, you know, that's when, and after that, then the passion really kicks in, right? And that's where our natural propensity to act will come out strong. You can't repress it, right? And so that's why we go and do our And actually, you know, this is where we'll have, just thinking about this, this is where we'll have challenge in modern society, because, you know, they want to make the men and the women equal, right? But generally speaking, in a Vedic culture, there's a recognition, or there's a recognition of the importance of the role of the women as mothers, basically. Men can't do it. Only the women can do it. And of course, the men have their place as well. And so, it's very interesting. We see in modern Indian society, the boys and the girls are all educated to the max. Right? Is that right? Yeah. Then what happens? The girls get married. And then what do? They become mums. which is fair enough. It's a natural. So all of it, but all of that education is there so that they can get a good husband, huh? Not to get a job in that particular field, but just to get a good husband. Am I right? Yeah. So anyway, this is, and we see that also within the Bhagavatam, we see very ordered, structured roles for the men and for the women, and generally the women they work on the domestic side, look after the children. And of course, there are reasons for that, because that then also makes a peaceful society, right? Which is a challenge. It would be a challenge for us because, you know, the people who say, hey, how come you don't let the women be this, that and the other thing? Right? Why do they have to be at home? So anyway, ashram, we haven't talked about ashram, but vana and ashram are required within society to have an ordered, peaceful, structured environment where we're fulfilling our material needs, right? But that's the basis upon which we build, or it's the foundation upon which we put the spiritual culture, which is the most important, right? And the Vana and Ashram construct is a platform, somewhat of a material platform, right? Because it recognizes the material propensities of the individual so that they can be properly engaged and be happy in that environment, given that we're in a material world and you can never be happy, but that's another thing, right? But we're happy if you're doing the things that come naturally to you and you do them well, then despite the fact that Jammamritu Jaraviyadhi exists in the material world, you'll be happy or satisfied at least, right? And you'll have a peaceful society, relatively peaceful society that supports a real peaceful society. When you know the main focus or the reality that's presented by the Vaishnavas and the Brahmanas is all of that is meant to support our pursuit of spiritual culture, which is what we're doing in ISKCON, pursuing spiritual culture. Not only pursuing spiritual culture, because that can become a bit selfish, but pursuing spiritual culture with an eye to giving it to others. Right? Not that we just want to become self-realized and, you know, om out. Right? And so you see that, you know, you see that with Srila Prabhupada. Dynamic, active, always, and this is this reality distinguished it from illusion for the benefit of all. It's giving Krishna consciousness to others as well. That's the real measure of our spiritual culture and our community too, for that matter, is how we learn and cultivate these qualities and characteristics within ourselves, individually and as a group, but then as a group, how we give that to others. This is the spiritual culture that Srila Prabhupada envisaged for ISKCON, right? That we cultivate Brahminical culture in our morning programs and evening programs, that we demonstrate sane sanity, right, and competency and stability in our pursuit of our occupational duties. And by doing that, we, you know, demonstrate how one can balance spiritual and so-called material activities individually and as a community. But then also, we use those, the demonstration of that culture, we also, we broadcast the Krishna conscious ideals in a variety of ways so that we influence others to also take on the same culture. Because we know that's what makes us happy. And what will make everybody happy. Right? We do it because it makes us happy. Anybody here not happy? Nobody's going to put their hand up and admit it. I'm not happy. In the material world, I am not happy. But when I'm in the association of the devotees, I am happy. Right? When I was really sick a few years ago, the thing that I missed the most was be able to sit in this room and chant japa with the devotees. That was such, it was horrible. So, you know, okay, there's challenges, there will always be challenges, but there's nothing like chanting Hare Krishna with the devotees. Or be in a kirtan with the devotees, right? And we see that. They're jumping up and down. They're bouncing off the walls, throwing their clothes around. Yoo-hoo! Right? So we can see these people are obviously having fun, right? And that's what we like. That's our culture. Kirtan. Sankirtan is our culture. It's our fun, right? But it's also our means of giving it to others. This is interesting. What an interesting... This is a spiritual process. We think spiritual process means goes to the Himalayas and just, you know, do private meditation. But the Hare Krishna movement tips that all on its head. Right? No, you chant Hare Krishna with others and then you go out on the street and make as much noise as you possibly can. Right? Make a disturbance, practically speaking. Right? So this is a revolution. It's revolutionary because, you know, we see people come to the temple and they want to stand in front of the deities like this. Right? And then we're all jumping up and down. Pushing them, you know. So... what a culture. What a challenging also, because, you know, we want spiritual culture and we're attracted to peace, you know, shanti. We're attracted to that. And why we like to associate with the devotees. But then Prabhupada says, no, now you have to get up and go out on the street and chant Hare Krishna, regardless of what happens. Huh? And that's also part of that spiritual culture and is actually part of what makes us peaceful and happy and satisfied. So the munis, or the devotees, they understood the importance of the Varnashram system. Especially in this situation, they saw the fact that the king was missing and the leaders are an integral part of the whole structure, because they keep the shape. The brahmanas will tell them, here's the shape, and it's out of shape here, or it's out of proportion there. Now put it back. So they were concerned for the welfare of everybody. The king needs to be there. He needs to be a qualified king. And he needs to be obedient to the brahmanas or the saintly persons in order to structure society in such a way so that everybody's making spiritual advancement. And especially for the members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, we have to see within our organisation that we have a structure, that we have leadership, and that the leaders are following the guidelines that have been given to us by Srila Prabhupada, which ultimately means, you know, reflecting the wishes and desires of the previous acharyas. Right? Like the Goswamis. You know, the Goswamis are a very good example of Munis, at least in the modern age. In that, what were the Goswamis doing? What in the Krishna Kirtana Gana Natana Paro? What were they doing? Krishna Kirtan. They were doing Harinam. And they were dancing, chanting and dancing for the benefit of everybody. Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipuno. They were studying the Shastra. They were discovering the places of worship, the tirthas, right? Or creating the holy places, basically, which we're doing by opening up temples. They were teaching others, right? So we have examples of what to do in our tradition by following in the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and they were basically doing what the Goswamis were doing, but adjusted to time, place and circumstance, which is what we need to be doing. Not we need to be doing, we are doing. Yeah. Okay. Kvandaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai.